We begin with an awards ceremony held at the Whitlam Institute, University of Western Sydney. Several scholarships and first winner of the Jack Kelly Prize. It's an event set up by the Royal Society of New South Wales, and Jack Kelly was indeed royalty, a professor of physics at the University of New South Wales and president of the Royal Society. And his daughter, Karina Kelly, was on your screens for decades as host of the Quantum Science Show. And the winner of the prize is Jaime Alvarado on The Birth of Planets, as we reported 2 weeks ago, those incredible hot Jupiters and gravity.
Well, gravity has always been in my mind because it's one of the fundamental forces of nature, and it's what governs the behavior of all of the planets and all of the bodies in the universe. So a bit more locally here in the solar system, we have big planets like Jupiter and Saturn, which are very, very important for the smallest planets like Earth and Venus and Mercury and Mars. Now that after many, many years of exoplanetary research, we have found thousands of big planets, then the question is, what is the role that these big brothers of the solar systems, what is their role in the evolution of a whole planetary system? Key role that they play in the formation and also the evolution of the smallest planets like Earth, which at least until now, we know that is on these planets, is on the small planets where life evolves and where the life is expected to form. So the presence of big planets like Jupiter or Saturn is very important, is crucial for understanding the formation and evolution of the smallest planets.
The point about gravity, as people have famously said when they're working out the classic notion of physics, you know, the standard story, gravity is always the most tricky one to work out, how it, in fact, may be influencing, say, these bodies in the solar system. Now, when you're looking at the galaxy we have, the rocky ones, the little ones, are closer to the sun, and it's when you go further out that you get most of the big ones. Do you ever have the really big giants like Jupiter's close to their star?
Well, that's actually at the core of my research. Here in the solar system, we don't have anything like that. All of the small planets are very close, and all of the big planets are very far. And from the models of planetary formation, that's what we expected for a very long time. So we thought that that was the only way that this could be, right? So having the big planets very far from the star because of the material that they are composed of. All of these planets' main composition is gas and ice. And, well, you expect gas and ice to survive very far from the star, not close. 35, 40 years ago, the only picture of a solar system that we had was ours, the solar system. Then we thought that was the only way. But the very first exoplanet that was confirmed back in 1995 changed all of this completely, because it showed us that this is not the only picture. And then there's many, many other possibilities out there. And yeah, the very first planet that we detected is actually something that we call a hot Jupiter. So a hot Jupiter is a planet just like Jupiter orbiting super, super close to the star. Now, that orbit, in some cases, can be less than one day, and that's when we call them ultra-hot Jupiters. But these hot Jupiters are big planets just like Jupiter, but orbiting in less than 5 days. Something that, for us at the time, and even now, seems a bit ridiculous, but it is what it is, it's what we have found. And it's these big planets that have orbits even smaller than the orbit of Mercury here in the solar system. So Mercury, for instance, around the sun, does it in 88 days, whereas a hot Jupiter will do it in 2 days, in 3 days, with the size of Jupiter. So this is something that has a lot of consequences for the evolution of other planets in the solar system.
Yeah, I would have thought that if you're right next to a great big star like our sun, and you're all made of gas, it'll go boing, you're naked, and there's only a small stone in the middle, and that's it.
Well, yeah, there is some rules for that to happen. What is expected, and is actually one of the things that I'm investigating at the moment, is when you have these big planets close to their star, because of gravity, because of the strong gravitational interactions between the star and the planet, and many other things too, for instance, like the spinning of the star and the spinning of the planet. Like the combination of all of these effects, but mainly gravity, it will make the planet move every time a bit closer to the star. So as the planet moves closer, like a limit that we call the Roche limit, and when that happens, then the planet starts losing his self-gravity.
Is that why they have tails?
Yeah. So what is expected to happen, and it has only been observed and detected for a small planet, and is that when these planets cross the Roche limit, the planet starts being disrupted. What happens is that the planet gets destroyed, and all of the debris, all of the material of the planet can remain orbiting around. And then there's a very interesting possibility and a very interesting result that hasn't been observed yet, but is that from the debris of these big planets, other planets could form. A very interesting hypothesis that we're studying at the moment is that, okay, what if one of these big planets, because they have moons, what if these planets migrate with their moons, and when the big planet gets destroyed, what if one of the moons starts collecting all of the material that the planet leaves behind? And then maybe you could have the formation of a rocky planet.
Like Earth? Do you think we could have been a big Jupiter once?
Well, that's something that actually we're studying with a friend and a colleague of mine, and is that what if Earth comes from the destruction of a proto-Jupiter or something that existed in the very, very beginning of the solar system that got destroyed. Maybe not in the case of Earth, but maybe that's something that could happen in a different solar system, given that to date we have detected close to 7,000 exoplanets. So we have a lot of possibilities, a lot of systems where this could be happening.
Yes, I actually interviewed the exoplanet queen. She's actually Jessica Christensen from Caltech. And she's an Australian, Queensland, and I think she's discovered 66. But apart from that, you know, her record, your own record, you've won the Jack Kelly Prize just now, which is fantastic. He being a former professor of physics at the University of New South Wales. So congratulations.
Thank you, Robin. Yeah, I got my Jack Kelly Award for my PhD research, completely based on the evolution of hot Jupiters and focused on the evolution of ultra-hot Jupiters, that are these big planets orbiting in less than one day, actually now.
Ultra-hot meaning how hot?
Well, the hottest one is Kelt 9b, which is about 6,000 Kelvin. And at the moment, I'm working with a planet that was detected by mission by NASA. And that planet is around 4,000 Kelvin. So they're very hot.
Yeah. Can you translate that perhaps into Celsius?
It's almost the same. It's just, you just need to subtract like 273 and that's it. So close to 6,000 and close to 4,000 Celsius degree.
Bloody hot. Well, good luck with that quest and congratulations again.
Thank you, Robin.
Dr. Jaime Alvarado is at Macquarie University and comes from Colombia. And yes, these Royal Society Awards give you an indication of the range of nationalities and thriving campuses across Australia. The next award went to Jaden McKinnon from Wollongong, who uses mass spectrometry to reveal the chemistry of your tiniest cells. Jaden, congratulations, a scholarship.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud to receive this award, especially since I don't typically look like your person from science. I am covered in tattoos as well, so it was very nice to be recognised for this award. Yes, I do cop that a little bit. So it was.
We can't see the tattoos.
No, I know, but my bank account definitely felt them. So unfortunately, I'm not showing them off tonight. But yeah, this definitely means a lot. I mean, it was really nice to be recognised for my academic achievements and research, which is very
well,
nice.
You're on the campus at Wollongong, yep. And one of the people there is one of the most famous spectroscopy persons in the world. He's actually one of the people who has pioneered some of this work, looking at the tiniest chemicals and their reaction. I wonder how many people know that, and when you cross the road to the campus for innovation, that's where they do 3D printing of body parts, and that's where they export ears to India. Wollongong is really not just the place it was. Modern Wollongong, it's changed from a smokestack place to a wonderful, innovating scientific place. Do you get that atmosphere?
I do, but also only being 24, I don't think I quite grasp the history of the place. But I do feel it, especially walking across that innovation campus. We do a little bit of work with a bit of electron microscopy over there, and you can definitely feel just the rich history, especially the strong research background coming from there. So I am very proud to be doing my work out of University of Wollongong, and hopefully I can stay there, but I'm also open to joining other places.
In your wildest dreams,
yes,
with that kind of fine detail, shooting lasers, two lasers,
yes,
at the chemical structures, what will it lead to, do you think?
The possibilities are really endless. Really, we're only restricted to the user now and actually grappling with the chemical data that we get. We almost get too much information now. But what I believe it will lead to is we're discovering now that every single cell in the human body is in a different state. So the further and further that we can push the resolution of this technique, the more we're going to uncover. But are we also potentially biting off more than we can chew? Maybe. But
not in Wollongong.
No, not in Wollongong. Definitely not. Maybe Queensland. But University of Wollongong, nothing is too big for us. But also the discovery of new biomarkers, especially as sensitivity sort of goes up and we're discovering new important molecules that were perhaps overlooked in years previous when this technology wasn't available. So I believe that's where we're heading, the discovery of new biomarkers, but more importantly, what we can see just simply because the technology is getting that advanced. So, yeah.
Congratulations again. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Jaden McKinnon. Our next Royal Society Scholarship winner is Jacinta Martin, who comes from further north. Newcastle is a wonderful place because, like Wollongong, it's turned itself around because when BHP left, everyone thought, it's all over. But it wasn't, was it? You got science.
The uni took over. Yeah, no, I think the biggest industry coming out of Newcastle is actually the university, which is amazing because it's much cleaner air without the coal.
But do you think there'll be enough scientifically connected jobs around?
I think Newcastle actually has a very, very strong biotech industry. So I actually did the biotech degree at the University of Newcastle, and we have a placement at the end of it. And we have some amazing academics who spend a lot of time making connections with those industries. And we send our students out to those industries, and almost every single one that goes and does in-work placement gets a job out of it.
Isn't that amazing? Okay. Now, let me tell you, when I started the science show, and we're in the Whitlam Institute, it was, I think, the last year of Whitlam's government, 75, and we got into trouble, like the ABC people often do, immediately, because with Matt Peacock and other helpers on the science show, we exposed something called asbestos, which everyone said was perfectly safe, and also the basis of industry. The next thing we did, even more trouble, lead in petrol.
Yeah.
Now, talking about PFAS, which of course is so valuable in putting out fires, mm-hmm, fire resistant and so on, been around forever, mm-hmm, and people say it's been around for so long, it surely can't be doing any particular harm. But you have found stuff.
Yeah, we found a lot of really interesting outcomes. Actually, in Australia, PFAS has been outlawed for 50 years. What that actually means is we removed the long-chain PFASs, so 12 or more carbons, and replaced them with shorter-chain ones, which are supposed to be excreted faster. Same kind of issue as the BPA. We just replace it with something else. We don't yet know what that's doing. But yeah, so we're not even being exposed to those long chains ones unless you're in a contamination site anymore. But we are still seeing these long-term effects. The place that we are inspired to do this study, the reason this came to light is because there actually was an increase in the incidence of testicular cancer. And then the Defence Force started doing some investigations around the RAF bases, and that's where they found very large contamination issues, and that's because that's where our firefighters practice. And they were putting all those foams onto the, you know, the fires to get rid of them, and then they got into our waterways.
Now, you're doing generational work with mice.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way of checking that sort of research with people?
Yeah, so if I get my fellowship, which I'm very, very hopeful to get, we have this really exciting strategy that we're going to go out to Williamtown, and we're already in conversations with the spokesperson of the Williamtown people who have been affected, because we want to grab human samples. The thing that I'm really excited about is if we can grab enough samples through gestation or into children's lives for quite a significant period of time, we'll also be able to grab their blue books. Every single child in New South Wales gets given a blue Blue Book. And a lot of the outcomes that are in there, we also are looking at our mouse. So we can start seeing if there's any similarities by correlating their levels of PFAS in their blood with the outcomes across their lives so far. So
yeah. Leadership, yes, I can see.
Definitely trying.
Congratulations, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Jacinta Martin, scholarship winner for her investigation of PFAS used to fight fires. University of Newcastle she comes from. Next winner from the Australian National University is Dr. Abby Pandey for work on colon cancer. People suggest that in Australia generally too much red meat is eaten and such like.
Yeah, that's associated with the risk of developing colon cancer, yeah. Eat more veggies, basically.
Eat more veggies. Is that what you do?
Yeah, I'm vegetarian, so. I do, yes.
What other suspect things? Smoking, of course.
Yeah, smoking is directly linked to multiple different cancers, including colon cancer.
I'm really thoughtful of the fact that there you are at the Australian National University John Curtin School. Yeah. Do you know Ian Chubb?
Unfortunately, no.
Generation gap. He was Australia's chief scientist and famously was treated for cancer by mobilising his immune system in a way similar to the one you described. So it's very interesting that there is a, as you suggested, various ways of looking at other diseases. Have you thought of looking elsewhere as well, apart from bowel disease?
For now, I'm restricted to intestinal cancer, but now we are moving towards blood cancer.
What sort of blood cancers?
So currently I'm looking at something we call diffuse large B-cell lymphoma.
And what is the mechanism, actually, when you alert the immune system to do something so remarkable?
That actually happens because the receptors that I just described, they are incredibly powerful in detecting specific stuff. In our case, for example, if we have DNA that's not in the headquarter, it's coming from somewhere else, it will just pick up that and then activate the alarm system. So you need certain molecules for certain receptors, and then they do their job very beautifully, independently.
There are several sciences which Australia is famous for, leading the world over the many years. One of the people I really loved meeting was Sir Macfarlane Burnet, who had put it on the map. He was the person who showed that you could do research in Australia, not just overseas. But were you inspired to choose the immune system based on the fact that Australia does so well?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I studied my master's and my undergrad was in India, and then I came across a lot of great researchers in Australia, and then, yeah, I decided to come here. Definitely Australia is one of the leaders in cancer research, yeah.
I must just mention something about one of your professors, the person who's on the campus at the ANU, and that's Professor Jagadish.
Yeah, Chennapati Jagadish, yeah.
Do you know how he came to science?
That much I know, but
well, it's very interesting because he was born in a very poor village and he did well at the infant school, yeah. And the suggestion was he could go to the high school, but that was 13 miles away, dealing with miles in that part of India, and that was too far and there's no transport.
Right.
So what happened? Well, the maths teacher from the high school came to the village and talked to the parents and said, would you let him live with us? As a result of living with the high school teacher, he got his education, went on to a university in America, and when he came to the ANU, he was so grateful, he and his sister put together $160,000 to get more students at the ANU from India.
Yeah, I know that program, actually. We have students from India and Indonesia through Future Research Challenge program. Yeah, he started that. It's a great program. And then, yeah, we got very, very good students, actually. Yeah.
Congratulations. Thank you
so much.
So many stories from our universities. Dr. Abby Pandey from the ANU via India. And Professor Jagadish is now president of our own Australian Academy of Science. Those scholarships set up by the Royal Society of New South Wales give an idea of the huge range of sciences flourishing in Australia. Dr. Xujin Wang at the University of Technology Sydney is marshalling AI, artificial intelligence, to combat fake news and give us, he says, 90% guaranteed genuine news. Now, I invented something rather strange called GradGrind GDP. Which is using AI and using Dickens' very severe teacher, Mr. Gradgrind, who said you must stuff your head full of facts, 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 and they're very strict. Now, when I mentioned that at the journal Nature conference at the University of New South Wales, a professor at the back said, we've already got that. In other words, AI preparing pupils for the lesson. Could we add your technique to show them how to look for false information, 99% accurate? That would be wonderful. Could you do it?
Yes, I think the industry partners are actually quite interested in our algorithm.
And so the algorithms could do it, but do you think you could help teachers show pupils how to train themselves to look for fake news and fake information?
Oh, yeah.
Critical thinking, in other words.
I think so. Actually, I think it's quite similar to the mechanism when how we train our model to distinguish between the true news and the fake news.
Are you surprised as you do your work how many people want to believe the fake news?
How many people?
Look at the elections.
Yeah. Actually, I think everyone.
Everyone is willing.
Yeah, because you don't need to intentionally to believe the fake news. In some cases, you just unintentionally, you could read some fake news. Oh, you think this is the truth. Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of have a very large impact on the society and on the public opinion, I think.
Final question, how much does that worry you?
I quite worry about that, yeah. Yeah, especially in the current era we know, we call the generative artificial intelligence, right? The machine actually can generate a set of content, especially the very latest Sora, we can say. It can generate even the video, right? In one minute, we cannot distinguish whether it is true or not.
Thank you very much and well done.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much.
Dr. Xujing Wang at the University of Technology, Sydney, with an AI innovation he thinks can combat the pestilent ubiquity of fake news in our media. He has an algorithm. And those awards were organised by the Royal Society of New South Wales, our oldest scientific society. And they were at the University of Western Sydney. Sasha Bailey from Sydney was also a winner but couldn't attend. That was a glimpse of the variety of our students and their science across our campuses.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.